It is the Rise and Shout podcast, and in episode 122, Matt and I break down the big game against Utah. It's rivalry week here on the podcast. We talk first of all about Bronco Mendenhall and a little bit about how he might stand out from a lot of his counterparts in college football coaching. We then break down the game and talk a little bit about what we think will be the difference between victory and losing this weekend against the Utes. We then talk about some of our memories of the game, including where we were from Beck to Harlene. And we also talk about the rest of the schedule and whether we feel better or worse about how our future opponents are playing. This is the Rise and Shout podcast. You can always download us on iTunes. You can always catch us at LoyalCougars.com and on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And of course, you're going to listen to us and our rivalry talk right now. Matt, it's podcast time again. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, I'm just glad to be here.
We're glad you're here. And I say we as just one person, so that's a little weird.
Yeah, but it's kind of par for the course.
It's the collective we. I speak for the fans, for the listeners, for the... No, I don't. Anyway. So Matt, let's dive into the topic that enthralls everyone. That every time we mention it, people are like, oh, please talk about that more. And no, not baseball.
Oh, I thought for sure it was baseball.
No, I don't want to rub it in your face that the Nats stink and the Red Sox are really good. That's below me.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Really, it's below me. How's your fantasy football team doing?
Oh, really? We're going to go there? I was projected to be the highest scoring team in the league this weekend.
Yes.
It is not working out that way.
You do not win on projections.
No, apparently not.
Well, you know, you've had a couple injuries and stuff.
No, I just had a bad draft. Let's just call it what it is. I had a strategy. I did not execute that strategy at the draft, and I'm going to pay for it all season. Which is why I'm setting up a new fantasy football league, which will consist of people such as my 8-year-old son and my wife, so that I can at least dominate something.
I wouldn't guarantee that.
Well, yeah, because in a league that small, everybody's going to have the greatest of everything.
That's
so
true.
It's going to be, we'll see how that goes.
All right. Well, let's hop into the podcast, Matt, because we have been chastised, and rightfully so.
Oh boy!
So let's get into the tweet bag right off the bat. If you want to
tweet bag,
if you want to tweet at us, it's at BYU_RiseShout. You can also email us. That's Adam@LoyalCougars.com, Matt@LoyalCougars.com, and of course, check out all the great BYU coverage at LoyalCougars.com. So Matt, Justin Whiting on Twitter, that's at JN Whiting, had this to say: love the podcast this week. Thank you, Justin. But not a single mention of Jamal or Lasique. Taysom was great, but share the love. #BYU. Don't you feel a little chastised?
Yeah, he's right.
In the quick hit video, we mentioned Jamal, but there was not in an hour of us talking-ish one mention of Lasique, and there should have been because he was a monster in that Texas game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think in any other game, his line would be even more impressive, right? But there was a lot. There were a lot of rushing yards spread around in that game.
Yes, and he ran strong and hard, and I feel like he has gotten better over time, and I think he will be an asset going forward. But one, I was called out on the comments section at LoyalCougars.com of the podcast about not mentioning Elisa. Elisa carried the ball for like 5 carries for like 15 yards or something.
It was 8 yards for 8 carries for 23 yards.
Whatever.
I mean, but it wasn't up there with Lasique's 15 carries for 89 yards and a touchdown.
In a game in which the team averaged like 8 yards a carry, he averaged 3. So
I will say I was glad to see him out there.
No,
I was glad to see him in pads and see him playing. I think it's great.
But he wasn't. But, he was
Lasique
not.
Did look real good.
He was not part of the massive success of the running game.
That's great. I would agree.
He did not help drive that. So that's That's all I was trying to say. It is awesome to have him back out there. So, Matt, it's now time for everyone's favorite segment of the podcast, Cougars in the News!
Cougars in the News!
I have no idea why we do that, but it's fun.
I don't know.
And it hurts
and I tried
my
to
voice.
Emphasize the S on the end of news this time based on feedback from listeners.
You got feedback from listeners on that. You just made that up.
Didn't somebody say that it sounded like we were saying something other than news?
I don't remember that. It might be something like without your clothes. Anyway, Bronco Mendenhall, Matt, there is a book out. And I just closed the window to Cougar fans, so that
attaboy.
My internet skills are top notch.
Welcome to the interwebs.
Welcome to the interwebs, Mr.
I remember Mendenhall. The first time you got on the internet, you were pretty freaked out.
What are you even talking about?
Yeah.
You really remember? Oh, after my mission.
Yeah, right after your mission, we got on to buy Red Sox tickets online, I thought you were going to die. I thought you were going to die. I think I already said that, but I'll say it twice.
Yeah, I was blown away that you could buy.
You were freaking out
that you could buy tickets on the internet. It was a weird time to go on a mission. When I left, no one had email. When I got back, professors were sending your syllabus out via email. It was a weird time. So back on Coach Mendenhall. Okay, so there's a new system out. New book out called The System, The Glory and Scandal of Big Time College Football by Jeff Benedict and Armen Katayan. So I have not read the book yet, but they did some excerpts out of it in the Deseret News. So they did three excerpts out of it. One focused on Kyle Van Noy, but one focused on Mr. Mendenhall. And I was kind of blown away by... They basically, in this, Jeff Benedict and Armen Katayan, they really slam college football coaches, it sounds like, in this book.
Yeah.
And paint them in, let's just say, not a positive light, okay? But, wow, do they do the opposite for Bronco Mendenhall. So what's your take on this? They basically say he's kind of the exception to the rule versus the average of those college quarterbacks out there, college coaches, I'm sorry, out there.
Well, I think that as a college football fan, I don't know as much about. Oh, really?
I'm sorry. This segment is brought to you by a cold, refreshing Dr. Pepper.
There you go. I don't know as much about coaches at other programs as I feel like I do about Bronco Mendenhall, just because I follow the BYU program a little bit closer. But most of the information we get about a lot of the big time coaches comes as a result of scandals. Something goes wrong. Someone's about to get fired. Those type of stories. So I think that in general, fans' views on head coaches are a little skewed, because it's coaches that don't have problems, don't get the attention. But I do believe that Bronco Mendenhall is a different kind of a head football coach than the average head football coach at a Division I program. I think that the way he approaches his job, the way he thinks about what he's doing with his players. I mean, shoot, we've talked about, just this concept of allowing players to transfer without any types of restrictions and letting people out of their commitments and those types of things. In a way that other coaches don't. So I think there are a variety of things that indicate that he is different than most college football coaches. Now, how different and, is he really the one or two type coaches of his type as compared to what the rule is? I don't know. I don't know if I have enough information and I haven't read the book yet. But I think it's for him. I think it's pretty cool to get recognized that way, and to be talked about that way in this context. And I think it's good exposure for the program when you think about when they've stated that really what they've set out to do is increase access and exposure. I think this type of thing is exactly what they're talking about and hoping for.
Well, for the second week in a row, we're going to talk about Brandon Ogletree. He did a piece in the Deseret News, kind of confirming what was written in the book. And talked a little bit about an excerpt about Mendenhall becoming the coach, and how in his first interview with Tom Homo, he didn't want to say anything negative about how Gary Croton ran the program out of loyalty. I can tell you my experience. I don't really know the inside workings of college football and coaching and stuff, only what I read, like everybody else. But I can tell you in my direct experience in corporate America, I've never even heard of somebody after the one boss has the bad run, and then you're looking at the lieutenants as potentially come in and run a group or a brand or whatever. People are usually very quick to point out what the last guy did wrong.
Oh, it's a race to who can throw him under the bus first.
Correct. And it, you know, I find it refreshing. I know some people may think of it as Mendenhall was being naive, but he did get the job, so it couldn't have been that naive.
I don't think that approach works anywhere but that situation in this program.
Oh, sure. And he's definitely in a unique situation and has a unique set of challenges, but also a unique set of advantages, being that his employers will value, obviously they want him to win, right? But they will also value him keeping them out of the headlines in a bad way much more than other programs. I mean,
that's true.
It's just the BYU does not want to be at the center of one of these scandals that have come around. And certainly during Croton's time, unfortunately, there were a couple of things that caught attention outside of the program that were negative towards BYU.
And I think one of the real telling parts of that particular story is that he was likely not going to get the nod until a group of players self-organized and went to the administration and begged them to hire Mendenhall. And I think that really speaks volumes about the type of coach that he is. And that whole story about being faithful to Croton and not wanting to point out some of his deficiencies, I absolutely believe it based on what I've seen him do. I mean, the guy is loyal. He is the definition of loyal to a fault.
Yes. Yes.
It sounds like a legitimate, you know, picture of who Bronco Mendenhall is.
Yeah. And you know, that loyalty can, as we've seen, can be both good and bad, just like most attributes that people have, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move on from that. One thing that came out of the Texas game, Matt, was Taysom Hill, because of the eye-popping numbers from that game, statistically as a runner, got a little bit of national attention. And there was even, you know, some talks of, because of him being a sophomore, is he a 2014 Heisman Trophy candidate type? And, you know, you saw this not mentioned by BYU fans, but actually mentioned in mainstream national type of press. So, Matt, we talked a lot about Taysom last podcast, so we're not going to spend a ton of time on him today. But just curious to your thoughts after watching this guy, he's now been a starter, what, four games? He's played like 4.5 games total.
Mm-hmm.
What is your feeling? Do you think he has that potential, or are we, and potentially even the people in the national press, just looking at a stat sheet and overrating what he could potentially be down the road?
I don't think we're overrating what he could potentially be down the road. I mean, and I think it's important to use the word potential in this context. You know, what he's done has been great. But, you know, this does not paint who he is, or this, you know, I don't think we really know yet. But I think we do absolutely know that there is potential there for him to do some really amazing things with this team and as a part of this program. I think he has shown enough to demonstrate that the potential is definitely there. What's left for him to do now is to live up to that potential by executing on the field. You know, he's going to have to pass a little bit better than he did against Texas to really live up to that, to get there. He's obviously an incredible athlete. And the team, I think, enjoys playing around him.
Yes. And, you know, as we talked about last week, he is an incredible runner. And there's evidence last year, but again, all the sample sizes are small, that he can be a better passer. One thing I mm-hmm. wanted to bring up, Matt, that shocked me, okay, as I was looking at the statistics preparing for the podcast, who is our leading receiver in number of catches this season?
Oh, I don't have that up in front of me.
Now, granted, there's only 22 complete passes so far. So we're not talking about a lot of passes. But if you had to guess, not looking at the statistics, who's caught the most most passes from Taysom Hill so far? Take a guess. We're not, like, giving out prizes or anything.
Oppo, but it's not.
It's not. He leads the team in yards with 71. Three catches for 71 yards. But it's Skylar Ridley. 5 catches, yeah, 48 is. Yards. And Hoffman's going to pass them both in short order, assuming he can stay healthy. But I just look at that group of wide receivers. And, you know, I watched a lot of football the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I watched the Patriots game on Thursday. And you saw, you know, Tom Brady getting really frustrated with his wide receivers, and probably too much so. I love Tom Brady, but I think you gotta control those emotions a little better and not show those guys up. But I think Hill may be suffering from a little bit of this. I'm not saying that he's anyway as a passer like Tom Brady, but I think the wide receiver core so far has been very underwhelming in the way they've played, except for blocking. I mean, there were a lot of really good blocks by the wide receivers, including just a phenomenal one by Hoffman on one of Jamal's long runs. But my point is, so far this year, there have been too many drops. There have been, I'm guessing, and I'm not an expert on this, but some bad routes as well that have led to some of these incompletions. So I think not only does Hill, as you've talked about, have to get more accurate throwing the football, these receivers have got to play better if this passing game is going to in any way match what the running game's been able to do.
And the thing about it is, I don't know if we need them to match what the running game's doing, but they need to be consistent. And, you know, if the running game can't get the team into a third and short situation, we need to be able to throw the football.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got to get more than 4.5 yards per pass.
Right, right. So, you know, on those short routes, they need to be able to get some yards after the catch. But at the end of the day, if the ball hits them in the hands, they've got to keep it.
Yeah, and they got to make some, you know, sometimes you got to bail the quarterback out with a ball behind you. Not every time, but we've seen very few, like, wow, besides Hoffman's catch against Texas, we haven't seen where you go, wow, you know, nice catch. You know, and you need some of those as a quarterback, even if you're an elite passer. You'll need some of those, especially in tight games against good competition. So, Matt, it's time to start our preview of the rivalry game. Are you ready? Are you ready to preview?
Oh, I'm ready.
So, Matt, I watched every minute of the Utah-Oregon State game, mainly because to get ready for this. So I feel like I am more prepared to talk about Utah than I have been in our last couple of years when we've talked about them since independence. So it's time. So Matt,
well, I'm excited to hear what you've observed.
I'll put it very quickly in two phrases. Their offense is quite good. Their offense is quite good. Travis Wilson is playing very well. Their defense is terrible. And I know some Ute fans, and we have a couple that listen to this podcast, may disagree with it. There is no doubt in my mind their offense, their defense, is not very good. Not anything like they've had in the, you know, past, I don't know if decade's the right time frame. But their defense is not real good. But let's get into this for a second, Matt. How good is Utah? I mean, right now we've got 3 games. One of them doesn't really count. I don't know what we learned from beating Weber State 70-7. But a close game, a victory against Utah State at home, and then a close, very close, overtime loss to Oregon State also at home. They haven't played on the road yet. What's your take on how good is the University of Utah? Better, worse, or about the same as what you thought coming into the season?
I think they're better than what I thought coming into the season. As you've already noted, the offense is performing pretty well. And the offense is performing better than I would have expected them to, you know, given some of the staff changes and all these things. The defense is worse than I thought they would be. I guess the right way to say this is, you know, the reason I think that they're better overall is that the offense is more improved than I expected, and the improvement there is greater than the loss on defense.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Sure. And to be fair, they've faced what is probably, let me rephrase. They faced two above average offenses. So
it's, right. That's true. Utah State is a good team.
Yep.
And obviously Oregon State is a pretty good offense. I mean, it's 50 points. 50 points in that game means a lot more than 70 points against Weber State.
Oh yes, absolutely. And you look at Oregon State so far this year as a mode of comparison, right? They lost that Eastern Washington game inexplicably, beat Hawaii, and now beat Utah. They have defensive problems. Oregon State does, but they're clearly their offense is running at a high level right now. So Matt, one question that comes up, I think almost every time, well, I shouldn't say every time, but recently has definitely come up, is something that we got on Twitter from Andre Hutchins. So that's @AC_Hutchins. He asks, isn't the only thing BYU has really lacked in this series, and I assume he means recently, is mental toughness? Is BYU intimidated by Utah? So Matt, what's your take on this? Is this run of Utah being, you know, beating BYU pretty frequently a matter of mental toughness? Or what is it? What's the one factor that you would put into as to why the last, I guess it's the last five games BYU has lost four of them?
I don't know if I'd say mental toughness. There's really only one game in that stretch where I feel like the BYU team gave up while the game was still going on. And, you know, it pains me to even think about or talk about that game. But I really feel like, you know, that was an instance where the team looked like they quit. They quit on each other. They quit. But I don't feel like that's been the theme in the rivalry over the past handful of years. I think really the major issue has been the difference in level of preparation. I think as a coaching staff and as players, the Utah program has put more effort into preparing for this game than BYU has. And I think that's a result of, you know, and Mendenhall has for a long time kind of played this, you know, we're just approaching this like any other game. But he has made some comments this year that indicate that they're singing a slightly different tune. They've had 2 weeks to get ready for this game. So hopefully we see a difference in that. But I feel like not so much mental toughness, but a different kind of, maybe not even level of preparation, but a different kind of preparation coming into that game, I think has made the most major difference over the past handful of years.
Yeah, and the thing for me with the mental toughness, I think that's a narrative and not necessarily very descriptive of what actually happens on a football field. For example, besides the 2011 game, which was, I assume, is the game you're referencing where you thought BYU gave up, and it was just a disastrous game. Some early turnovers, all of a sudden Utah's way ahead, and it just seemed to snowball out of control. These are the scores of the games besides that one in the rivalry since 2006, okay? And heck, you could go back to 2005. We'll start there. 41-34 for Utah. 33-31 in 2006 for BYU. 17-10 in 2007 for BYU. 48-24, that one in 2008 for Utah was a little bit, though it was a little closer than that. 2009 BYU, last time we beat them, 26-23. Then 17-6 for Utah, 54-10 as we talked about. And last year, 24-21. My feeling is in these close games, the narrative is the tougher team won. Typically, I think it's the better team, you know, typically. And sometimes it's the luckier team. Sometimes it's a bounce of the ball or a call or whatever in games that are that close. Like, I don't blame officials. I'm just saying, or you know, a bounce of the ball. I'm just saying when a game is a three-point game, one play can make a massive difference. So there's that part of it. The other part of it is you talked about preparing for this game. I don't know. I don't know if BYU hasn't prepared well enough for it. Quite frankly, they probably, in a lot of these seasons, have had more talent on their roster than BYU has. Over the last few years, I don't think that's true anymore, but I think it has been. And that 2011 team, I think the 2011 Utah team was a better football team than BYU. We got embarrassed, but you know, I think a lot of this, quite frankly, is narratives that we give after the fact. The mental tough team won. And one narrative is one that I hate, Matt, that I'll ask you about, is, oh, they're going to face a ticked-off Utah team. And if they win, that'll be the story. It's, oh, Utah was just so ticked off, and you know, BYU had the off week, and it just threw everybody off. And then if Utah loses, the narrative will be, oh, well, you know, they were just so deflated after that overtime loss. And I kind of feel like we attribute these things when, in fact, most of the time, the team that won was the team that just played better that night or day.
Well, and I think that in this game, you know, it is a rivalry game. And if I don't know that those external factors, I think they're even less of a contributing factor in this type of situation than in others.
Sure.
Because this game is played, it's independent of all of the other things that are going on, I think, for both of these programs. It is, you know, this has nothing to do, especially at this point, has nothing to do with conference standings. You know, this year, this has nothing to do with anybody's run to a BCS game or anything. I mean, this is just, it's just BYU-Utah. It is the rivalry. It is the way, you know, these two teams, the way it has been forever. So I don't, in this situation, I don't buy those other things as factors. I mean, if you need something else to get you ready for this game as a player on either side, you're not doing it right. And if one of those things makes this game feel less important or gets you discouraged because you lost this game in overtime or whatever, or you had the week off and so it makes you soft. I mean, if you have that problem, you probably don't belong on either of these rosters.
Yeah, I agree. I think these are narratives that as fans and sports writers love, but in the end, I don't know how much effect they actually have on football games. And I'm not saying that there isn't an aspect of mental toughness, but let's be honest, most of these guys that have gotten to play at this level of college football have to have some degree of mental toughness, right? I mean, you can't play at the college level, and usually you get weeded out pretty fast if you can't, as an individual, do that. And you're talking about, you know, 50 guys on a roster, how many of them feel the same way on a given day, right?
Right.
So I think those are some of those narratives that we give. So, Matt, let's talk about first. We talked a little bit about Utah. Do you expect their offense? I mean, this is going to be, I think, the best offense we've played so far this season. I shouldn't even say that. I think it'll be the best one we've played so far. So I don't think we can expect the dominance that the defense have had, but what do you expect out of our defense against their offense? Is this defense maybe as good as last year's? I mean, there's been some pretty good play by the defense in the first two games.
I don't think I'm prepared to say that this defense is as good as last year's. Maybe they will surprise me, but I do think we are still suspect in parts of the defensive secondary. And without executing good schemes up front, that can become a real serious problem for this team. And so do I think that they can perform? Do I think that they will slow this offense down? Yes, I do. Do I think that Utah will have less success on offense than they have in their first few games this year? Yes, I do. Do I think that this matchup, Utah's offense against our defense, is probably what will decide this game? Yes, I do.
Yes, I think it is. I think it is what will decide the game, and we'll get into our predictions here in a minute. But it seems like we might be on the same brainwave on that one, Matt. So let's talk a little bit about our offense now. We talked a lot about the offense in the last podcast. What are we going to see? Like, you know, we saw this dominating performance against a Texas team that, quite frankly, it looks like the wheels might be coming off on that one, unfortunately for the Longhorns after their loss to Ole Miss. And we're recording this on Sunday night, by the way, so if there's any, this is a warning that if any big news breaks about injuries or anything later on in the week, we did not know about it. But what do we expect out of this offense? I mean, obviously no one is going to predict the same type of unbelievable performance by Taysom Hill, right? That's kind of a once in a career type of thing. I mean, he's not going to rush for, you know, 250 yards again. Well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe he will. But what do we expect out of this offense? Do you expect a similar type of mix between pass and run? Do you think we'll see it more balanced because the Utah defense is going to force a little bit more to pass?
Well, I think we'll see a different distribution of touches on offense. I don't know that there will be a big difference between called runs and called passes. I think what we saw against Texas is Taysom Hill was taking what the defense was giving him. And fortunately for the BYU offense, a lot of what they gave him was committing to the pitch man so that he could run 70 yards down the field for a score. And that's what they gave him defensively.
Right, right.
I think that Utah's defense is going to play a little bit more soundly against some of that read option.
Yes, they will be more disciplined. I have no doubt of that.
And it's going to require Taysom to spread the ball around more. It's going to require Robert and I to, you know, mix up some of the play calling as far as what types of runs and, you know, who's getting the ball and where they're going with it. But we're going to need to be able to pass the ball more effectively. And I think that we will. I think that you didn't need to against Texas. There was not a situation, you know, there wasn't a third and medium to get the ball across the first down marker to run the clock out and win the game. There weren't situations like that in this particular matchup. And so, but I think that the game is going to require more completions from the passing game. And I think that we will get there. I think that they will execute a little bit better. I don't think that Taysom Hill is going to run for 250 yards on this defense, but I do think he's going to run a lot, and I do think he'll run effectively.
So, Matt, at the beginning of the season, one thing when we talked about the offense that I was absolutely wrong about, okay, and that you were spot on, or maybe you were a little under, but you were a lot closer to me.
Let's say spot on. I like that.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. So Jamal Williams so far has carried the ball in two games 63 times. Okay? Mm-hmm. 63 times. Okay? He carried the ball 166 times total last season. Now he's averaging over 5 yards a carry. Hasn't hit the end zone yet, but I think that's just inevitable. He'll hit the end zone here soon. I thought they would spread the running around a lot more than they have. But it's really, I mean, Lasique was a nice piece, as we mentioned before, in this game against Texas. But it's the running game has really been the Taysom and Jamal show. Do you expect that to continue? Or are we gonna ride Jamal Williams for 30 carries a game? I mean, that's, in the modern era, that's a lot of carries a game. I mean, we saw him get kind of bent like a pretzel a little bit at the end of that Texas game. I mean, can you carry that much and stay healthy? I mean, are we worried about him, or is this is the new offense and he's going to get maybe not 30 carries a game, but he's going to get 25 touches every time out?
I think that we're looking at what, you know, this is kind of, as you alluded to, there's no such thing as a feature back anymore, right? I mean, it's all done by platoon. And especially in this type of an offense, I mean, I don't know that you can carry the ball 30 times a week, week in and week out for a whole season. You know, but when you're playing a Texas defense that's letting him run for over 6 yards a carry in that game, you just keep giving him the rock. But, you know, I think that comes back to this idea of taking what the defense gives you. And when the defense pushes you to spread the ball around a little bit more, I think you will. And I think Lasique will get more carries this week than he has in the past two games. And I think he's ready to do that for the team in order to mix up some of the where the ball goes on offense and also give Jamal Williams a little bit of a spell.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you'll see Lasique, you'll see Alisa. I think one of the things is, quite frankly, Jamal's just really good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so part of this is, you know, and it's nothing against Lasique, Alisa, Hine, or anybody else that's on the roster, is Jamal is just he is a beast, and the announcers mention it in the game. He runs hard. He rarely, they don't keep as good stats in college as they do in the pros, but in the pros, they now have that stat about yards after contact. Mm-hmm. I bet you he'd be one of the leaders in the country at that. I mean, he does not go down when he's hit, and I think that, you know, to average over 5 yards a carry, you have to do that, you know. Nothing against the offensive line. They did play a ton better against Texas, but this is not an elite offensive line. This isn't Alabama we're talking about, where the holes are always massive. The holes sometimes are not going to be that big, and you're going to have to eke out that extra 2 to 3 yards after somebody hits you. But, man, 63 carries in 2 games is a lot. It's a lot.
But at the end of the day, what we might be discovering here is that he's the best running back that has ever played in this program.
Sure.
And then perhaps that's true by a long shot, in which case, yeah, I'd give him the ball north at 20 times.
Yeah, I mean, there is no doubt in my mind that he is already in that conversation from a talent perspective. Whether he'll have the career to match that, part of that's health, part of that's circumstantial, right? But man, right. he's a talented kid, and he's really, really good. Switching to the wide receivers, I already talked about them a little bit, Matt. Is anyone really going to step up besides Cody? I feel like we talk about this every single podcast. Now we've got 2 games of data to look at and experience, and Falslev's kind of been invisible. Ridley's been invisible. Oppo's had, you know, a 52-yard catch at the last play of a game, and if you take that out, he's got 2 catches for 19 yards. Are we just looking at basically the offense is going to have to be Taysom, Jamal, a few of the other running backs, and then Cody Hoffman and change as far as the passing game goes?
Well, and I think I'm going to surprise you with what I'm about to say, but I think as Cody Hoffman eases back in from being hurt, I think he will be back to regular old Cody Hoffman. I mean, you see a circus catch like he had against Texas.
Yeah, it was great.
I think he's going to be just fine. But I do believe that somebody else in this wide receiver core is going to step up, you know, and be another serious threat for this team. And I think that's going to be Skylar Ridley.
Okay.
He's come a long way, and I think he's getting better. You know, when you look, and obviously Taysom Hill's comfortable throwing him the football.
Yep.
And I think that's really what it's going to come down to. Now, I love J.D. Falslev. I see him, you know, he plays a very crucial role on the offense, but I don't know if he's in a position to create the types of plays and separation and things that we need somebody other than Cody Hoffman to do.
Yeah.
But I think that next player is going to be Skylar Ridley, and I think over the next couple of games, somewhere in here, he's going to have a real breakout game. I feel like that's going
to
happen.
Well, and to back up your point, I think there is a... If Hoffman can help them stretch the field, I think that will create space underneath for other wide receivers and the tight ends.
Absolutely. And I think that's going to be a big deal going forward when you look at, you know, even with the completion percentage, right? I mean, if you don't have to play anything deep, because there is no threat, it changes your whole scheme.
Oh yeah,
right. And but if we can get Cody Hoffman stretching the defense downfield a little bit, I think that we will see some of these other things improve.
Yeah, and as I said, I watched a lot of football this past weekend, which I'm sure a lot of you did, and I noticed that, you know, those deep threats just like it just opens up the middle of the field to other receivers and wide open wide receivers in a lot of cases, just because that there is that fear and the safety who might otherwise be helping in the middle of the field has to pinch over to one side, and it just creates holes. So hopefully that will happen for the Cougars Saturday night. So Matt, let's jump a little bit more into our prediction part of the program. We're going to do over-unders. Are you ready for over-unders?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. So let's pull up what I had put together here for the over-unders. That's right. I put these together and write them down. So let's look at rushing yards, Matt, as a team for BYU. We'll set the over-under at 225 yards. Are you taking the over or the under for rushing?
I'm taking the over.
You're taking the over. Are you taking the way over? Do you think I set that way too low, or do you think it's fairly close to that?
I think it's fairly close to that, but I think that the offense goes north of that number. But the yards are going to be a little bit more equitably spread out than the past couple weeks.
And harder to come by than they were against Texas. You're not going to have 550 yards. Though that would be awesome.
Oh, it'd be amazing, right? But I don't think we're going to rush for 500 yards against
Utah. I would really like a blowout more than anything else. But okay. I am also going to take the over, but just slightly. Just slightly. Okay, so passing yards, Matt. So far this year, BYU is averaging passing yards per game 120.5. I'm going to set the over at 151 yards. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the under.
Ah, so you think we're not going to see a big light-up passing game. I'm sorry. The passing game for yards is 152, not 121. I mistransposed. But I'm still setting it that same number, 151. Do we see above or below that? You're saying below.
I think below. You know, but a lot of this, you know, and this comes back to if Hoffman plays, I think that changes the way that it works. But you know, if we're going to rush for 225, you know, another 150 yards in the air, yeah, you know, we're getting up towards, you know, I just don't think the numbers are going to be there.
Yeah. Well, I disagree with you. I'm actually going to go over. I think that Utah is going to commit a lot of people to the run. And I think if we can protect Hill and roll him out, on some cases that there's going to be some passing yards to be had. Not a ton. I'm not talking about 350-yard passing day for him, though that'd be pretty cool if he went from 250 yards rushing to, like, 350 yards passing.
That would be pretty awesome.
But that would be pretty fun. But I think we actually are to win, we're going to have to probably throw for close to 200 yards out of the passing game, I think. Of course, I thought that against Texas, and we didn't need to do it. But this should be a very different game. So over under total offensive yards for the University of Utah, Matt. So far this year, BYU has held opponents to 334 yards per game. I'm going to set it at 395 over or under for total offensive yards for the University of Utah.
Oh, under.
Really?
Yeah.
You know they're averaging a lot more than that.
Yes, they also played a game against Weber State where they scored 70 points.
Yes, yes. But let's take that out of the equation for a second, okay? So they scored, and I'm not trying to change your opinion. I'm just providing facts to the listeners. Against Utah, their total yards was 450, which is above 395. Mm-hmm. And then against Oregon State, now granted there was an overtime in there, but they didn't do much in overtime, their total was 539. So you're still saying under 395.
I think we're a better defense than they faced this year.
Oh, I have no doubt of that. I have no doubt of that. I don't think Utah State or Oregon State's anywhere close to us defensively. So they're not going to put up, unless it becomes some bizarre type of game, they're not going to put up 48 points against us.
No.
So, okay. Well, Matt, now it's prediction time. Now we've kind of laid out how we're thinking the game's going to go. So I'll hand it over to you first. Prediction time. Who wins? BYU, Utah, what's the score? And what do you think are the keys to this game?
You know, as we previewed this season coming into over the summer and then coming into the season, we several times, you and I, ran down the schedule and talked about, you know, where are the losses here? Where are the wins? Where do we feel like the team is vulnerable? You know, where do we think this team stands at the end of the year? And there were a couple games that I kind of waffled back and forth on. There were a couple games I was consistently worried about. And this game fits into both of those categories. I've not watched as much of Utah's footage as you have this year. And I'm really just going off of our performance in a single game.
Sure.
But that all being said, I believe that BYU wins this game. And I think BYU wins this game by a score of 31-14.
Whoa!
the difference in this game is our defense.
You shocked me. I'm shocked.
I think that I just don't see them having the kind of success offensively that they've had against our defense. But the key is going to be protecting our vulnerable spots in the defensive backfield. And the best way to do that is you've got to penetrate. You've got to beat them at the line of scrimmage. You've got to get into the backfield. You have to disrupt the passing game. We're going to have, you got to hit if Travis Wilson holds the ball for longer than 2 or 3 seconds, somebody's got to, at that point, somebody needs to be hitting him. And that's the way you're going to protect the defensive backfield. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball against us very much at all.
They've had some success running the ball so far this year, but I agree. It's going to be much tougher sledding against us.
Oh yeah. But I do think Travis Wilson is very good. And I think that if we give him an opportunity, very good might be a little bit of a stretch. I don't think he's like going to win the Heisman or anything, but I do think that if we give him room or time back there, receivers are going to get open. And so that for me is kind of the big play, the big key of the game. The secondary key to this game, I think, is going to be our ability to move the ball on the ground. And that's going to come down to spreading it around. I don't think we're going to get away with the Taysom Hill show against this defense. We're going to, like, Lasique is going to have to get some carries, and he's going to have to carry it the way that he did against Texas when he came in. I do think the offense is still going to be successful, and I see them struggling against our defense.
All right. Well, man, I thought I was going to have a bigger difference than you in the final score. I think, again, our defense will play very well. I do think their offense, I think where you and I disagree, I think their offense will generate more yards and potentially more points than what you have there. I have BYU winning 28-20. The line from Vegas right now is 7. So both of us are taking the over. You're taking the way over.
I'm a homer. I'll just admit that.
There's never been any doubt of that. Do you want to know a nice little tidbit out of Vegas?
What's that?
The line for Utah State and Southern Cal, Utah State at USC, powerhouse USC, is also 7. So Vegas believes that the difference between Utah State and USC is the same difference between BYU and Utah. Now,
that's crazy.
That is more about, number one, Utah State has been pretty good the last couple of years, right? So there's part of that, but also how the mighty have fallen. And I saw one tweet earlier today. I am apologizing ahead of time. It was a BYU fan who said that Chucky Keaton was going to basically cost Lane Kiffin his job after Utah State pulls up the upset in Los Angeles. But anyway, back to the rivalry game, Matt. So we're both predicting wins. You're actually predicting a pretty, a pretty smooth ride. I really hope you're right, because I would really like to just win this one. Without, back to Harleen was great, but I don't need those every year. Don't need those every year. So, Matt, a couple of ones out of the tweet bag as far as the rivalry itself, okay? The Irish-Mexican, that's at Bullishism on Twitter, asked this: is the rivalry A, exhausting, B, fun, C, overrated, or D, what rivalry? A, exhausting, fun, overrated, or what rivalry?
I'm going to go with exhausting, as in a little tired.
Yes.
I think I have a, and we've talked about this a little bit, I think I have a slightly different take on it than BYU fans who've lived most of their life in the state of Utah. I think there's a different dynamic to it there. I'd like it to just be fun, and it's a lot more fun. Like, if you beat a team, you're in, you're out, right?
Yes.
And that would be pretty cool too. But, some of the silliness and craziness that goes on, I just feel like it's getting old.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I mean, this has nothing, my thoughts that I'm about to express really has nothing to do with the BYU Utah rivalry has to do with sports rivalries. I've gotten to the point where I loved rivalries when I was younger. The Yankees, Red Sox, which, you know, as a Red Sox fan, I was part of BYU, Utah. Pick the sport, the Celtics and Lakers or Celtics and the Knicks. You know, when I'm a hockey fan, so the, like the Bruins and the Canadiens and stuff like that. And some of those rivalries I still really like. And we've talked about this in the past couple of years on the podcast. I don't care for the vitriol that is exchanged between fans. I've got good friends that are Utah fans. And unfortunately, those crazy exchanges kind of drown out what I think is probably most people don't act that way, right, on either side of a rivalry. But the big, loud, obnoxious people on both sides end up kind of drowning out everything else. And for me, if I had to answer that, I don't know if overrated is the word I would use. But what I would say is that, you know, we're going to take a couple years off from this rivalry. University of Utah football and BYU football will survive. They're not going to implode. Yeah. They're not going to all of a sudden, you know, I've heard people say, well, BYU can't survive without Utah or Utah can't survive without BYU. I find that to be balderdash. It's not true.
Well, yeah, it's like the guy that, like, it's like the couple that's been together for a really long time, you know, and then they get to college and they're like, oh, well, maybe it's time for us to break up. And everybody's like, oh, how are the two of them going to get on without each other? And then they both kind of get over it and move on. And that's a terrible analogy. You should probably edit that out.
No, I'm totally leaving that in, but go ahead.
But that's really what this is, right? I mean, these programs right now are both in vastly different places than they were even 10 years ago.
Sure.
And, you know, in some ways, 5 years ago.
Absolutely.
And so I think that this is a good time, I think, to, you know, to kind of for there to be a couple years where they don't play. And maybe, but, you know, and it probably is just, you know, a handful of crazy people that kind of and then the incessant talking about the handful of crazy people
right,
that kind of
right,
take the
right,
fun
right.
out of it. Right.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
But rivalries should be fun. And, you know, it should be fun when we get back together and play again in a couple of years, you know, and I'm pretty level headed about the University of Utah for about 50 or 51 weeks out of every year. You know, and at some point this week, you know, I'll read something or whatever, and I'll get a little bit more fired up for this game than the average BYU football game, because it is a rivalry game. You know, and I was talking to a guy I know who's a Utah fan. You know, and who's in my ward, talking to him today. And I said, hey, whatever happens next week, we both know basically this is how it's going to go down. The game's going to end at like 1 o'clock in the morning. We're both going to be tired. We'll probably both be late to church. One of us is going to be in a really good mood. The other one's going to be in a really bad mood. We'll have some kind of really awkward exchange where we're both trying to be cool about it. You know, and then, you know, and then a week later we'll be fine.
Yes.
And we kind of laughed about it, and that's the way it's going to be. You know, and after church, he flashed, you know, the U sign, and I said something like, go Miami, or whatever, right? And we're just kind of joking around about it. And it should be fun that way. But it's a lot more fun when you feel like your team's got a shot.
Yes, and I feel like BYU should be favored in this game, right? I feel like, you know, not that Utah can't win it. I mean, that can happen on any given Saturday, but... the other part for me, Matt, is my wife's going to be out of town, and I'm going to be with the three girls. I'm going to be up till 1, and I have to be at church early.
That's not going to happen.
Oy.
You're going to be late.
Oy, Matthew. This is not I'm really hoping not to have, like, one of those triple overtime games.
Yeah, but those are awesome.
Those are awesome, but if I'm up till, like, 2, I don't know how I'll make it. So, Matt, we had...
let's just DVR it and watch it the next day. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah. No one will mention something at church. So we had a question from Pat Hammond on Twitter, at Crazy Kook Fanatic. She asked, where were you for Beck to Harleen? Epic sports moment etched in our memories forever. So I've told my story a bunch of times. I was at a friend's house who was a little... itchy trigger finger on the fast forward between plays because we were watching on a slight delay because of DVR. I don't remember, where were you?
Beck to Harleen, I was at our brother's house.
Okay.
Watching that game. Okay. And I believe that that's the game where our nephew jumped out of his seat on the couch and hit his head on the ceiling.
Wow, that's impressive error there.
Yeah, he was pretty excited. I believe that that's the game that that happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I've talked about this story, but my favorite moment related to the Beck to Harlene was having the opportunity to listen to John Beck recount the play.
Yes.
In person. Was pretty cool. And he's, you know, this is a guy that loves football, loves, you know, his experience as a quarterback at BYU, and was, you know, years later is telling this story with real passion.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's fun about a rivalry like this, is that you play a team so many times that you develop this history, you know, and these stories, right? And there's stories like this. You know, there was a long stretch where they didn't have a lot of good stories to tell. And I'm not saying that to rub it in anybody's face or whatever, but, you know, if that's the byproduct, then that's fine. But what I'm saying is that that's what makes it fun. That's what makes this cool, right? And so in that sense, I think this is fun. You have those moments, you know, and you have the 4th and 18s and stuff like that to talk about. So as far as Beck to Harlene goes, that's kind of my story.
Yeah. So let's do a quick barometer check for the rest of the season, okay? Definitely looking right past Utah. All right. I'm not going to say every game, Matt, but I'm going to say some of them. We have another week's worth of data. Georgia Tech, more or less comfortable than you were a week ago?
More comfortable.
More comfortable. Boise State, more or less comfortable than you were a week ago?
Much more comfortable.
Wisconsin?
More comfortable.
Notre Dame?
Less comfortable.
Idaho State? Just kidding.
I'm going to go with even on that one.
Okay, so I feel more comfortable about everybody except for Georgia Tech. I actually feel less comfortable. I watched some of them this weekend. That offense, they could move the ball against us, maybe. I mean, they've got some talent. Boise does not appear to be as good as they have been. Wisconsin, it's hard to say. You've seen the last play of that game against Stanford.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have won that football game. So so it's a little hard to ding them for that, you know, on the road. Not Stanford, Cal, right? They were playing Cal, not Stanford. I was just Pac-12 teams that – no, they weren't. They were playing Arizona State. I watched that game.
It was pretty late.
It was late. It was late. But anyway, that last play was atrocious. But I feel a little – I guess I feel a little more comfortable because I didn't think – I thought they would go in and beat Arizona State pretty well. Notre Dame, I don't know how I feel, Matt, because I've watched them a couple weeks in a row, and they played our Purdue Boilermakers. We both did grad degrees there, and Purdue's not any good. Like, that's a game that they could have easily lost, and they ended up coming back and winning. But I would say I don't think this is going to end up being our toughest schedule ever.
No, and I think it was billed as that, right? Yes. I mean, that's kind of the way we all felt about it at the beginning of the season. But a couple of these teams just aren't as good as we thought they were going to be.
Yes. And that can change. That can change. Teams can
and
swing.
And I think in the Notre Dame case, I think that it will.
Yeah.
I think that's why I'm a little bit less comfortable with that one. Sure. I mean, but obviously, Boise State is not what we thought they were.
No.
I'm not convinced that Wisconsin is either. But I probably need a little bit more data on that.
Yeah.
You know, Georgia Tech, I've always been concerned about that game.
I am more concerned now. You may have pegged this one a lot better than I did.
But I will say that the defense looks better overall than I was expecting them to look.
The BYU defense.
And I'm talking about our defense, yeah. I think the BYU defense is better than we were expecting them to be, especially after some of the injuries in the cornerback. So that's why I feel a little bit better about this, because defending that offense, it all comes down to assignments on defense.
Yes.
And if you play disciplined football that is well thought out and well schemed, you should be able to survive against an offense like that. And Bronco Mendenhall is pretty good at that, and he's got a couple players at very key positions that will keep their assignments and do what they need to do. So that's why I feel a little bit better about that game. But that Georgia Tech offense is difficult to stop.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing that Georgia Tech has going against them is the 2 weeks before they play us, They host Virginia Tech, who has a really good defense. And then they're at Miami, who may be a top 15 team. So we'll actually get a lot of good data about them. If they can hold their own against those two teams but the weeks before they play us, I will feel really nervous going into that Georgia Tech game. Well, anyway, Matt, this has been a fun podcast. The rivalry is coming up. You know, we're both seeing victory, but I think if recent history has shown us anything, it's most likely going to be very close and could come down to one or two absolutely crazy plays. For a ton of great Rivalry Week coverage, I would check out loyalcougars.com, the website to which we belong, and the blog to which we sometimes contribute, and where you'll find this podcast. You should also follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiceShout. As I mentioned before, you can email us, Adam@LoyalCougars, Matt@LoyalCougars. Follow that with the .com. And you should also check out our quick hit videos, which are about 5-6 minute videos that we do each week. We've been averaging 1 to 2 a week since the beginning of the season. You can find those at loyalcougars.com through our Twitter account or also on our YouTube channel if you search for Rise and Shout on YouTube. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for downloading, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!